Blog Talk Radio.
It was the night before Christmas, and all through the
house. Hold it now, wait, hold it. That's played out. Hit it!
Give me all that jive about things you wrote before I was alive. Cause this ain't 1823, ain't even 1970. Now I'm the guy named Curtis Blow, and Christmas is one thing I know. So every year, just about this time, I celebrate it with a rhyme. Gonna shake it, gonna bake it, gonna make it good. Gonna rock, shock, knock it through your neighborhood. Gonna read, gonna sing it till it's understood. My rap about to happen like a knee. You been slapping, or I told you been tapping on a hunk of wood. Bought a red through the dew with a friendly attitude and a slave full of goodies for the people on the block. Got a long white beard, maybe look kind of weird. And if you ever see him, he can give you quite a shock. Now people, let me tell you about last year when the dew came flying. Here, well, the hawk was out, snow was on the ground. Folks stayed in, 2:40 down. The beat was thumping on the box, and I was dancing in my socks. And the drummer played at a solid pace, and the taste of the bass was in my face. And the guitar player laid down a heavy layer of the funky chunky rhythm of the disco beat. And the guy with the 88 started to participate, and I could sure appreciate the sound so sweet. We were all in the mood, so we had a little food and a joke and a smoke and a little bit of wine. When I thought I heard a hoop on the top of the roof, could it be it wasn't me? I was feeling super fine, so I went to the attic where I thought I heard the static on a chance that the fans put the money breaking in. Put the noise on the top, put the noise on the top, put the reindeer cops to the trick.
What you say, Rev?
Yeah, I say he's supposed to say what you say your name was. I see that it's not clear. So listen good, buddy. Clean out your ears. Listen very close while I pop my game because my name's in the Hall of Fame. C-U-R-T-I-S. All right.
Gets clean for
what's ooh, up, Rev?
You on a day on the,
how
day
you doing,
when
man?
The cold wind blow.
Hey, the beard may be weird, but I never have it cheered because it's warm in the storm when it's 10 below.
Yeah. Boom, boom, boom. That's a good one, boy. Your guy is cold tonight. Can you stop for a drop before you go? He said, why not? If the music stops, and our chance to dance beneath the mistletoe. Yeah, I'm going to tell you, boy, that thing is tough.
It's timeless.
Now he's boxing, dance like a pro. And every young girl tried to rock his world, but he boogie, yogi, yogi, he had to go.
He had to go.
That's right.
That's one you can listen to all night. I ain't gonna lie. You can listen to
that
thing all night long.
That is a tough one there, man. He was doing those bars that young people liked before they were actually doing it during that time. He was actually rapping this thing before his time. Because, you know, when rappers first came out, all they had to do was just have a rhyme at the end of a line, you know. And,
right.
But now you have to have a rhyme mm-hmm. on top of the rhyme. You have to rhyme before you about 10 times before you get to the end of the sentence. And that's
a rhyme in the middle of the word. You can't only have to, you don't finish
exactly.
the whole word. You got a rhyme in the middle of the word.
Yep.
So.
Yep.
Yeah,
none of
yeah.
you guys out here now, man. They just going,
Hey guys, this ever happened?
That's it, man.
You gotta, you ever do this? A song you really, really like that you play it so many times, you start feeling a little guilty. You're looking around and seeing everybody else listening. You keep playing it over and over again.
Remind me, tell you what that remind me of, man. One time, Curtis and I were coming home from Livingstone. And the car broke down, and I was in love with the song "Let's Groove Tonight." We had to sleep in the car that night, and I kept playing that, singing that song over and over. Curtis finally said, "Man, shut up!"
Darn, Leo.
Tired
of that
song. It's like that sometimes, man.
It's like that on certain songs. I know, I get it. I know, I get it with my in the house here sometimes. Now, especially if you go out and you do something with that song, such as you might be singing in it, or you're doing a part in it, or if you might have been playing an instrument in it, or if you might have to produce it.
And boo.
Woo! Man.
Well, all night long, I was boogie, and boogie down the town, come on, girl, come boogie, all night long.
But see, that's the advantage, you know. That's the advantage when you're driving down the road and it's just you. Man, you'll play a song till you get till you get to your house. You'll be like 2 hours away.
Mm-hmm.
You play that
song. Right. Some of them some of them had that so much different stuff in it. Sound like you hear something different. Like another song by Erwin and Fry, Fantasy. I can play that all night long, man.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
all night and day.
Eric Queen and Fire fans, and some Commodores and some Confunction and Cameo.
Eric Queen and Fire just got the Kennedy Center on us this week, this past weekend. So they've got a big award, a big acknowledgement. It was like a couple of days ago.
Well deserved.
Well, what was it, the message in their music or something like that? That's what they got it for, right? Something like that.
Yeah, it's supposed to be people that made an impact with their art and their contributions and stuff like that. So it well deserved, just like you said.
Ain't hard on nobody. There's hardly nobody left but little Philip Bailey and Bert Ingwite.
It looked one of like a lion.
Yeah.
What's his name? Bert Ingwite.
They done, man.
Yeah. Yeah, that's Maurice White's brother.
Yeah, Maurice.
He left. Man, that hurt when he left, man. I mean, that just took
a he was sick.
Yeah, that was a
he
loss.
He was sick for a while.
You know what I mean? A loss. That was a loss.
Man,
that's like Prince, man. That was a loss.
It's a sad thing,
so
though, especially in groups. You know, when you have a group that you like, and then one of the main people that you like no longer there, whether they die or left, you know. And one thing you can give the Temptations credit for, at least for a long time, for decades, they can sometimes put in a replacement that you could like almost as good. And nobody ever thought it could happen with David Ruffin. We just like, oh, that's the end of it now. But then they came with Dennis Edwards. They were like, wait a minute, Dennis Edwards sounds pretty good. So,
they didn't miss a beat. They did not miss a beat. Matter of fact, they got more popular.
And we just thought David was the best anybody could do. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, right.
I mean, cause we still have
that
in the house, of course. You know, it's always a big debate.
Yeah,
David Ruffin.
That was hard to do.
Then it came out that psychedelic check, and Papa had a Rolling Stone, and man, that just came back with hit after hit after hit. Ball of Confusion.
Yeah.
Man.
No wonder David Ruffin committed suicide, man. That just came out there, man.
Paul Williams. Somebody wanted on the Temptation.
Yeah, you talking about Paul?
I was talking about. Oh, oh, sorry, I got the wrong one. Ladies and gentlemen, listen to the Brother Ferrer Radio Show. We're here every Wednesday night from 7 to 8. Every Wednesday night we can get together. And normally that's every night. Every Wednesday night. Normally. Tonight we got the full cast. We got Leon. We got Robert. We got Curtis. We have Joseph. We got the full cast tonight, man. When's the last time that happened?
Man, that's been a while.
Dude. Yeah. It's been a minute.
Welcome.
People start coming together for the holidays, man. People coming together for the holidays.
We're in the spirit.
We wanted to talk about the real meaning of Christmas tonight. And you know what? You know why I wanted to talk about loyalty? We're going to play that in a minute. You know why I wanted to talk about loyalty?
Funny, boy.
Because loyalty, we're going to talk about it. Loyalty, watching these Republicans.
Mm-hmm.
It's what made me think about the word loyalty. They're loyal to what? I can't quite put my finger on it. Here's what I'm saying. They pledge, they make a pledge with the oath of office. During the oath of office, they pledge to support the Constitution and all that stuff. But what you found out these guys are doing, they're pledging to protect their jobs. If they feel like they'll lose a vote, you know, it seems like it's just 10 or so votes, they're scared they'll lose. They'll stay loyal to that person or that concept who they think they can make sure they get those votes. Because right now, that little handful of votes that Trump has in his hands is what has all these people sucking up behind him. That's weird. That's kind of weird.
You know
what,
Leon? You know what, Leon, when you mentioned loyalty, sometimes I wonder in general, as human beings, are we loyal to are we loyal to principle, or are we really loyal to our own interests? Because sometimes people, they're loyal to something as long as it serves them. When it no longer serves them, their loyalty, they start making compromises and they start wavering and they make excuses and they. But loyalty, I'm finding out, is not an absolute. It's become, and more I watch this charade that's happening on Capitol Hill, and they've shined the light on. Now, what I did do when I was looking at it, sometime in my objectivity, I said, "Is this a Republican problem, or is this a human problem? Do we as human beings really understand and appreciate what true loyalty is?" Well, I know it's not. I know the Republicans apparently don't. But it calls you to also do some self-examination. Are we really loyal to principle as humans, or are we loyal to our own interests?
You know,
that's a good question. To think about.
Robert, you know something, Robert? You are right. But the funny thing about that is, oftentimes, the person with the mic, or whether it be the system or the news media or whatever, they have the power to make you think something is in your best interest as well.
They can. You're right. They can bend the truth. They can dictate the narrative.
You have poor white people who will support Trump. Now, but then again, it may be in their best interest for being racist.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not in their best economic interest, you see.
Right.
And African Americans have been, for the most part, so psychologically manipulated until we often would go against our best interests because the person controlling that mass media, you know, we often talk about the music. They may put it in the movies. They may put it in so many different things. You know, during this time of slavery, they did it through Willie Lynch. They did it through Jim Crow. They did it through COINTELPRO. But they always have some mechanism working in the background to make us act against our best interests,
including the Bible itself. They would put the words in the Bible to serve their interests.
Yep. You know,
and have black people even believing that they're supposed to have been slaves. They'll find a passage, and that's been throughout history. People who will control the narrative, like you said, Curtis, control the media, they can bend that truth, they can bend that reality to fit their own agenda.
Exactly.
And the one that has the mic has the power, really. That's what it boils down to, the one that control that narrative.
And see, right now, most people don't realize it, but I think those of us that are really thinking and watching, we understand that we are in a very dangerous state right now in America. And, of course, in something Desmond said on Sunday really, caused my ears to raise up when she talked about this Messiah complex, you know, where people are always looking for Messiah. And when that Messiah does not deliver as he promised, it causes anger and it causes frustration, and eventually it may cause an uprising because they don't get what the Messiah promised. And of course, and I look at Trump right now. A lot of these poor white people, you know, they've been struggling really. They've been struggling and they've been poor way before slavery, after slavery, and on into the century where we are right now. And they have been looking for a Messiah. And that Messiah has showed up. Right now they're looking at Trump as that Messiah. But see, the problem is Trump not promised them anything. He has not promised them anything but to make them feel good about being white again. And so eventually they're going to start wanting to feel some benefits from being white. And then Trump, what makes Trump so dangerous, see, he cares nothing about any institutions, anything about any law. He doesn't care about people. He only cares about Trump. And the point where these people start waiting on him to deliver as that Messiah, and he does not, he's going to blame that on something or somebody else. And that has the potential to cause a serious uprising in this country. And seeing Trump does not have the integrity, or he's not a decent enough person to just call his people off. He would see the country destroyed, other than to say, "I did not deliver to you. I was just using you."
You nailed it, because he's, even when the people see that things are not going to their liking, he's gonna, with the assistance of Fox News, they're gonna just pivot and point to somebody else, and they're gonna believe him. They're gonna believe it. They would rather believe. They're going to believe their Messiah.
They're going to believe the Messiah. And that's why I said we're in such a dangerous situation right here in America. And seeing there was this guy on the TV the other night, and one of the news people was asking him about the pending impeachment and the trial in the Senate and possibly removal from office, which, of course, most of us, you know, understand is not going to happen. And they asked this guy, a Trump supporter, what was his feelings toward that. He said, "Well, it's not going to happen. And if it does happen, it's not going to happen because my 357 Magnum says it's not going to happen." So it tells you what mindset.
They're just upholding that white supremacy, that white power, and they cloak it with these other issues like taxes and they pretend that they're interested in, but we know we're not blind. We know what this is about.
We all know, but see, the thing about it is those people don't know, and that's where the danger lies. You follow what I'm saying?
Yeah.
We follow you.
Yeah, we feel you, man. What you're saying is right.
We're here with you.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a dangerous situation. Well, see, the only thing, but see, part of it is, really, I'm be honest with you. I don't see no way out of this mess because the only way you can get out of this mess is you got to get every person in their right mind to get out here and vote these people out so there will not be no. In other words, you got to have such a wide margin of victory that there's no question.
Yeah,
well, it brings back up that initial question about loyalty.
Mm-hmm.
Loyalty is fluid in the eyes of some, even though they don't state as such. This loyalty to the Constitution and loyalty to democracy. It was good as long as it was serving the interests of the people who were upholding it.
That's right.
When democracy no longer serves the end of the majority, then, or they don't become the majority, or they're no longer the majority, democracy is expendable. And that's what we're seeing. We're seeing the dismantling of democracy because it no longer serves the party that's currently in power because they're about
that's
to
right.
be voted out. So democracy
right
now
right.
does not apply. Yeah.
Well, I'll tell you another reason why we're seeing the dismantling of democracy, because people of color are becoming the majority. And
Absolutely.
The majority, and if we are going to be the majority as far as the citizenry and the population or consensus, and they are going to be the majority as far as the power is concerned with economics and access to media and all that, you're going to see all the rules change.
Well, yeah. I'm going to tell you another thing, Curtis, that you just touched on. See, that's why right now you have the this tax break was just a part of that. Because basically what that tax break did is it concentrated a large portion of the wealth in this country to a few people.
Right.
Mm-hmm. See,
and of course, you know, of course, South Africa, of course, when it was under apartheid and white government rule, they understood that eventually that they would lose political power in South Africa. So what they started planning in advance was how to maintain economic power.
Right.
And see, and that's why right now you see them, just like, for example, one multinational company in the United States, because of that tax, Trump, that tax break, I mean, it put another $30 billion in their coffers, and that was just one corporation. You follow me?
Right.
So in other words, they're already putting the economics in place to continue to control the economics, and with them saying that in the future that they are going to lose political power.
Right. Yep.
And so right now they're using the political apparatus while they still have control of it to change the economic status in this country. In other words, shifting the money to the places where they want the money to be when they would lose economic political power, they'll still have the economic power.
Yeah. So you're going to see the intensification of voter suppression like you've not seen before, the more this continues.
Exactly right.
It's
going to continue because right now it's about the money.
Yeah.
Speaking of voter suppression, guys, I just read a headline earlier today, well, a couple of weeks ago, actually. It says every person in America should know Crystal Mason's name. In case you don't know Crystal Mason, she's a young lady, an African-American young lady down in Texas. She's facing a five-year prison sentence for trying to vote while ineligible. What happened was Crystal had a felony. And she signed an affidavit saying that she was eligible to vote. And when she voted, they realized that she had a felony. So they arrested her I said she was trying to vote illegally. And then a judge sentenced her to 5 years in prison for illegally voting in the 2016 election.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
Well, how about we lock up some of these folks down in Georgia who are depriving people of their right to vote? That's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
If justice was fair in this country, the people in prison would really be the folks right now who's running the country. If justice was fair, if justice was blind, justice is turned upside down. It's upside down on its head. You have criminals
all,
literally
Trump
running the country. Yeah, that's the first one.
Your president would be in prison, and most of the
so
called
all these guys.
I know the whole
thing. Here's the deal on this.
Alone would be in prison.
Right now.
Here's the deal on this
thing,
Mr. Mason.
Right now, in our country, we are in a state of anarchy.
Yeah.
You hear what I just said?
Yeah.
Yes, sir.
Yeah.
We are in a state of anarchy. And, of course, if you're in a state of anarchy, of course, that means there's lawlessness. So anytime you have a situation where people are just like, for example, in the Senate, people in the House of Representatives and the President, and for that matter, even on the Supreme Court, is actually ignoring the law of the land, which is the Constitution.
Yeah. Yeah.
So
it doesn't serve their interest.
Pardon me?
It doesn't serve their interest anymore.
So when
did y'all see what Mitch McConnell?
Mitch McConnell, just like, for example, Mitch McConnell, right off the bat, in other words, the Senate is the jury. The head of the Senate is like the head juror. You follow me? So if the jury has already decided what the verdict is going to be before they even hear the evidence or even go to trial, that tells you right there, there is no, don't expect no justice. In other words, that's just what I'm saying is, telling you that we have anarchy. In other words, these people are saying we are not going to follow the law, which is the Constitution, the supreme law of the land.
Mm-hmm.
Which means it will eventually
trickle
down.
Subpoena them to come
into
court, make them subpoena them to testify, they ignore it. It's just a mess of mess. Just a mess.
Just a mess.
I mean,
and
I thought Congress was going to lock you up.
Everybody that goes to trial, keep in mind, and everybody that goes to trial, as we all know, is not guilty. Everybody that we go to trial is not innocent. But you never have a situation where the jury comes out and say, we are going to exonerate the defendant before he goes to trial. That doesn't happen.
Especially if he told people his... Especially if he commanded the people that they called as witnesses not to show up. Don't go.
Exactly right. In other words, he's not presenting any exculpatory evidence. And any witnesses that could provide this evidence, he told them don't show up. If there was any exculpatory evidence.
Ladies and gentlemen, let's go to Brother Faria Radio Show. We're going to take a little small break right quick and come back. We're going to start talking about the real meaning of Christmas, talk about what we did for Christmas as kids, see if you guys got in. Tell me what you guys got for toys, or if you just got fruits and nuts. We'll be right back, ladies and gentlemen. Brother Faria.
Thank you.
All right, boys. Hey, boys. Let's I don't know whether you brothers, all of you brothers, know or not, but we lost a cousin over the past few days. Our cousin Annie Louise Gatewood Tanner.
Where is she living?
Sister Tanner. She lived in Marshfield, right, Joseph?
Yeah, she was in a nursing home. Down there. I think the nursing home was in Matthews or somewhere down in that area. But she was in a nursing home when she died.
Really?
Sorry to hear that.
Yeah. So let's take a moment of silence for her, man. She's a sweet lady, cared a lot for her grandkids. I would see her down here in Wadeboro stuff, trying to keep her grandkids on track, stuff like that, grandchildren. How are the children? That's the way she looked at it, brother. How are the children? Then we're going to take a brief moment of silence for our cousin, Annie Louise Gatewood Tanner. Alright, thank you, brother. God bless her soul.
Leon.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
If you have Sister Mildred's number, could you send it to me? Sister Mildred, I think she's one. She's a sister of Sister Louise.
Yeah.
You're my Mildred State.
Right, Mildred State.
Yeah.
Yeah. I know she put it up on our Justice Administration on our group chat with Messenger.
Mm-hmm.
And
was that Uncle Hewitt's daughter?
Right.
Yeah, that's Uncle Hewitt's oldest daughter.
That's correct.
First cousin,
mm-hmm.
First cousin.
First cousin.
Wow. Okay, that's rough.
Yeah, I don't have that number, Curtis, but I can get it.
I got a number.
Oh, yeah, Joseph got a number. You didn't share it with me.
I might have it in my phone, but I know I got it in my file at the office.
Yeah.
You didn't share
with
me, Robert.
I think the funeral is Saturday, by the way.
Yeah.
I think the funeral is Saturday.
Saturday, 12 at Flint Ridge.
Yeah.
12 o'clock at Flint Ridge.
Got a song I want to play, Robert, right quick.
Go ahead, bro.
There it come, boy.
Talking about the real meaning of Christmas. You know the real meaning of Christmas.
turn the day into a fairy tale full of frosty men and red nose deals.
Well, you know why they did that?
Yes,
please tell me.
You know why we got, we got snow and why we got reindeer and we got you know, all this other stuff that to symbolize Christmas. To me, this is my theory. I've never read this anywhere, and people are always asking me, where do I get this stuff from? And I always tell people, I can think for myself. I don't have to read everything. I come with my own theory. But my theory is, the whole attempt, the reason behind this, is to take the setting of the birth of Jesus Christ out of Africa. You know what I'm saying?
Mm.
Because we didn't, you know, because you don't have a whole lot of snow in Africa. You don't have a whole lot of evergreen trees in Africa. You don't have reindeer. You know, you may have some gazelles and all that stuff running around. But you don't have a lot of the deer like we see. Just about everything that we see are things that you would typically see in Europe or North America, but not in Africa. And, of course, we that study history and at the same time study geography, we know that based on the biblical description of the birthplace of Jesus, it had to be in Africa. Because keep in mind that the angel told Joseph to take the baby and the mother and go into Egypt. And, of course, we all know that Egypt is in Africa. And from that we know that God would not have sent Joseph and Mary and a small child on an intercontinental journey on a donkey. So it had to be in close proximity to where he was born, which, of course, was in Africa.
That's pretty profound.
Did that, bro. I'm going to ask you like everybody else, where you get that from?
What I be thinking, man. I'm a thinker.
Joseph is like Jane Baldwin said. He said, to be black and conscious in America is to be in a constant state of rage. That's what Jane Baldwin said. You just can't walk around with all this information in your head and not be bothered by
all this, all this consciousness.
Yeah, that's make you be mad. You
walk around here conscious. Yeah, you gotta get busy a little bit.
Yeah, if you conscious all the time, man, you can't function, really. You be knocking folks upside the head just walking down the street.
Well, see, the thing about it is, Robert, from my perspective and the way I feel, consciousness gives me freedom and peace. Because once you know the truth, you find comfort in knowing the truth. And so when you see people out doing all this crazy, foolish stuff, it doesn't faze you. You know what I'm saying?
And it gives you context. You know why they're doing it. And you don't have to be sitting there with this cognitive dissonance where you're not believing what your eyes are seeing, because you know the backdrop. You know the full story.
You know the full story.
We know what's going on with Trump. We're not, as you say, Joseph and the other brother, we're at peace. We know what's going on. We're not confused. We're not
questioning or
wondering what's going on. We know what's going on.
We know what's going on. And like I said, another thing, we are students of history. And we have seen this play out before. And the sad thing about it is we have seen how this ends. We know how this story ends. And just like I was telling Patricia last night, I said, do any of these people up here, do any of them know history? And are any of them familiar with George Santayana when he said that those who do not know history and who forget history, they are doomed to repeat it?
That's right.
Curtis. Gaywood.
Minister Curtis gave what?
Yes,
talk
sir.
To us, brother. Talk to us, man.
Hey, man. Talking about the real meaning of Christmas.
Yes, sir, man. Help us out.
Man, I tell you now. I'm going to take you back to 1995.
Wow.
1995, I was president of the Durham NAACP. In November of 1995, I decided to present the branch with what I refer to as Operation Boycott Santa's Cost. And, of course, when I got ready to present, I was a little worried because it had leaked to the media and certain people were not aware, and we didn't know what was going to happen when we got to the meeting because that was a pretty radical thing. You're talking about boycotting Santa's Cost or anything that sounds like Santa Claus. And so we knew that that was going to create controversy. So when we got to the meeting, we brought it on the floor for the people to vote on it to see if they were going to support Boycott Santa's Cause. And we saw people coming into the meeting like we'd never seen before, coming in on wheelchairs, walkers, some young, some old, packing out the meeting. It was like, oh, man, we're in trouble. But those people, Leon, Joseph, and Robert, unanimously, when they heard that we were talking about standing against the over-commercialization and the pressures of Christmas, the lies about Christmas, about Santa Claus and all these other lies, because we said it also would feed into white supremacy because you have this white image that we're giving all this credit to for bringing and providing toys and joy and all this other stuff, overshadowing the real person that we're supposed to be talking about that will provide these things, which, of course, would be Jesus the Christ, a person of color. So we were looking at it from the psychological perspective. We were looking at it from an economic perspective where we're putting all this pressure on struggling people, making them think, and of course, we talked about that, who has the microphone, the commercialists and the advertisers, making them think that they can hide all this stuff behind Santa Claus and make people spend money that they don't even have with the pressure build up behind Santa. So we were addressing it economically, making the rich richer and the poor poorer, taking money out of communities that should go into the communities, taking money out of our homes that should go in the home. And we were recommending that people take this time to do something to invest in the family and in the community, rather than take money that will make the community and the family weaker, because I feel that would be more consistent with who Jesus was, because Jesus, of course, came to uplift those who were struggling. Jesus was born into a homeless situation. He wasn't born into the Hilton or some of the hotels that might be, you know, considered to be luxurious today. He was not even allowed in the hotel. So we need to look at Christmas, I think. We need to look at it economically. Are we making ourselves poorer and making the rich richer? We are. We need to look at it psychologically. Why would you give all this glory and credit to a fat white image when we keep talking about how we must do something to address institutional white supremacy, supremacy and black degradation, then we look at it, definitely we should look at it spiritually. And if we do those things, we would come to the conclusion that we should not be diverting money out of our communities, diverting ourselves from the real meaning of Christmas spiritually, Jesus the Christ, and we certainly should not be continuing to play into this imagery where everything that we look up to is a white image. So I say we may need to continue boycott Santa's costs into 2020 and beyond.
Hey, guys.
Let me say this right quick, Robert. You're right.
Like I said, Santa's costs are another part of the effort to take
Christmas out of Africa.
I'm gonna say this right quick, Curtis.
Robert,
I'm watching. I just happen to have my TV on CNN while this is going on. And there's a fool standing behind this guy that's talking. Sitting behind this guy with, just talking. With, I guess he's a senator. I mean, a congressman. With a pair of Trump socks on. He's trying to make sure you see his Trump socks. That's how crazy these people are right now. But anyway, Curtis.
That's a sickness, guys. That's a sickness. That's a sickness, guys. Just know that.
Sickness.
That's a sickness. That's a sickness. Hey, guys, let me read you a passage from my book, Played in Full. It kind of sums up, in my own words, what Curtis was just saying. And it basically says, Santa Claus, also known as Saint Nick, is consumer exuberance personified. By inspecting the malleable minds of children with an insatiable desire for gratuitous largesse, this mythical elf has almost single-handedly guaranteed the furtherance of derelict spending. Santa Claus is supposed to be the goodwill ambassador and the embodiment of good cheer. Seldom has perception and reality been further apart. Instead, he is the distributor of woeful debt and a spigot on the desperate wallets of an undercompensated working class. His winter sojourn into Christmas night is laden with symbolic significance. An obese man championing a sleigh full of goods being pulled by a cadre of overworked reindeer is a fit representation of the fat cats in the retail industry delighting as their overpriced commodities are pulled off the shelves by an overburdened populace. Played in Full.
Well, how about that?
I'm going to ask you like I asked Joseph. Where you get that from?
That's good.
Hey, man, I read. But, you know, I've been, ever since Curtis did the boycott center, I've really admired what Curtis has done because he has shown a light on something that in marketing we call Christmas and this love for Santa Claus, we call that social proof. And that's why it's so hard right now for working class people to get out of the grips of it, because you're going to be looked at as an outcast. There's something wrong with you. You don't have the Christmas spirit. You're a killjoy. That's unbearable. That's difficult for most people to overcome, particularly somebody who's already feeling insecure, not a good provider in the first place because they're being beat up by the system every day. So they are gullible. They are susceptible like nobody else.
Yep.
And so they go out this time of year under all of that pressure of social proof, keeping up with the Joneses, following the leader, desire to belong. And they go out and spend. They really don't want to. They can't help themselves. This is mightier than most than the average person. This is more than the average person can endure. It takes a strong mind. A strong mind. Because your family is going to turn on you. Your friends are going to turn on you. Your coworkers are going to turn on you if you step out of line.
Let me tell you how this was very hard for me since you put it out there, Robert.
Mm-hmm.
This happened, like I said, in 1995. Do you know my daughter was five?
Mm-hmm. Mm.
That is
tough. Lord have mercy.
Do you understand?
That's
we
the toughest time,
stuff.
Boy.
We were
That's
going
the toughest
against
time.
The whole world. It felt like we were going against the whole world.
Oh,
and,
yeah.
And the thing about it is we stayed true to it. It was tough. I know Devlin was very upset about it sometimes, but she was also one of my biggest spokespersons. I remember I did an interview, and she was one of the people who talked about this tricky man named Santa. And she started speaking on it. And, of course, it was tough because, like I said, she wanted toys because everybody else was getting toys. She wanted to look at a big Christmas tree because everybody else was looking at a big Christmas tree.
And forget the meaning. Forget what it symbolizes or what it's about. It's only because everybody else has it. That's the really reason.
Exactly right. And so that was tough. And I felt a little guilty too after a while. I started feeling a little bad. I was like, I think about when I was growing up for Christmas. Man, we were just thinking about Santa Claus and everything else, and we couldn't wait to jump into bed waiting on Santa Claus. And so it was
all we did.
Hey,
yeah.
Curtis, let me tell you, don't feel bad, brother. For most of Channing's young life, I was carrying a similar attitude that you had, and it was, I'm going to tell you the truth, Curtis, I had to throw in the towel. I couldn't do it. I couldn't do it, man. I tried. I really tried. I could not do it.
Scared to go to sleep at night. I know I didn't.
Man, I was catching. Holy hell. And like, and I'm not mad at the family for putting me under the pressure, because I mean, let's admit, this pressure is coming from all sides.
It is.
And now, and like you said, you got a young child, and you depriving her from something that you were entitled to as a child.
Right.
That's what really makes it hard when you put in that kind of context. But hey, you had it when you were a child, didn't you?
And the only thing that made me feel justified, on the other hand, Robert, is I was, and the whole world needs to hear this, I was so heartbroken when I realized it was a lie.
Yeah.
I will never forget how I felt, because I used to be fighting the guys at school defending Santa Claus. They were already they already knew that there was no Santa Claus, and they were up there talking like that. I would be fighting. I mean, you're a lie. You know, we got into some real fights about that. And when I found out they were right, man, I just really felt bad. So that was the other thing about it, is it's cute when you're doing it. But the reason I believe it is because my parents told me. You hear what I'm saying?
I still remember the day that I found out. I walked
in
the store.
And I couldn't believe they would tell me a lie. That was the only reason I believe. That's why I was fighting. I said, my mama told me it was Santa Claus, and I know it's a Santa Claus. But I started asking her more and more questions. She started getting a little tripped up. And then she said,
mama couldn't hold the line.
They're like, we going to pay Santa Claus. I said, mama, y'all going all the way to the North Pole. She's like,
well, Santa Claus got a satellite office.
After about the third question, she said, you find out when you grow up. I was like, that left me wondering.
They got mama twisted in like a pretzel. Well, Santa has a satellite office downtown. See what happens. That's what.
Right.
He has division.
They started asking questions about that chimney thing.
Yeah, and then that chimney. Yeah, because we ain't
what
got
happened
no chimney.
What happened? See, Santa Claus, sometimes he used the door. But I was standing at the door all night.
It was amazing, though. Did you guys ever really catch them putting those fruits and nuts and candy out, though? I never did. I never could.
Never.
That was another reason. How did they do it, man? Never.
Whatever we got, they never caught them.
Look, Leon and Robin and Joseph.
I believe it was Santa Claus.
I never saw anybody even checking to see if I was asleep. You know what I'm saying?
I believe it was. As soon as I went to sleep,
there was some magic there, boy.
I don't know how they did.
We woke up.
I mean, there was about 10 of us in the house. Neither one of us saw it. How did they do that?
We
all going to sleep the exact same time.
I don't know how they did that, man. I believe it was.
Maybe there is a Santa Claus. Hey, guys, maybe that was Santa Claus.
Because one time I had some doubt. Like I said, I was going through that peer thing. And I said, Mama, can't y'all just bring the toys in? I know there ain't no Santa Claus. She said, get back in that bed. And I went back in there, man. I was bleeding after that night, because when I went to sleep, boy, I woke up. I was like, I believe there's a Santa Claus.
Yeah, I mean, one night I swore I heard Rudolph them on the roof, though. I swore I heard him out there on the roof one time.
And Daddy loved that thing. Daddy loved that game. He loved it.
Yeah, this is what happened to me when I first found out.
Yeah, man, I understand that.
Well, I don't know, man.
Yeah,
Yeah, I remember that.
I definitely understand that.
Now check this out. Now I'm coming home from school one day. I think I was been had gone clad, and I think may have been Cecil and Joe's, but somebody was out in the store talking. And I walk in there, and these guys, they were immersed in a conversation. It seemed like it was pretty heady conversation, pretty heavy. And Clyde turns around and says, "Man, Robert don't believe in Santa Claus. What y'all talking about?" Okay. I said, "Huh? What? No Santa?" And I went along like, "Oh, yeah, man, really." I mean, I was destroyed. I mean, I was sitting there. That's how I found out. Clyde actually just dropped it on me. "Robert don't believe in no Santa Claus." "Uh-huh. Oh, yeah, right. Uh-huh, uh-huh." I said, "Man, I'm just devastated, guys. I need therapy."
"What you talking about, Willie?"
"What you talking about, Willie?" That's exactly the way it was. "What you talking about, Willie?" Good one, Leon. That's a good one. That was well timed.
Oh, yeah, man. Well, we had some tough Christmases, guys. Y'all know that it was cruel. We had some cruel teachers growing up, man. They were nice and sweet. They taught us. They loved us. But no, I thought it was just insensitive of them to have everybody to stand up and tell what they got for Christmas.
Oh, man, that was cold. That was too cold.
Yeah. Man, I was sitting there trying to think of what everybody got.
Everybody toys in the neighborhood.
So that was really. I love my ancestors. Don't get me wrong. But they weren't thinking on that one.
No, see, this was before political correctness and some of the movements we have now. People were just doing, they didn't know any better, man. They were doing what they were taught. They had been trained since all the way back to slavery. They didn't know what they
were doing. Everybody stand up and tell what they got for Christmas. Leon, orange.
Well, a candy cane stuck in it, and some socks. Everybody, man, you don't pull the count that. Everybody gets that. That's not a gift. You count everything, boy. Some pecans.
We got a ball. They like, no, we you. Yeah, you mess around and say we. You say no, not you, not everybody, just you.
Yeah, teacher be praying
you. You see what's happening?
You know you got more than that. What else? Hey, teacher be pressing you. You know you got more than that. What else?
Well, I would always have to go to the bathroom when I heard him sing, get ready to start that up. I gotta go to the bathroom. Can I be excused?
May I be excused?
So I wait till they finish. When they finish, I just sneak back on in the room.
Yeah, that's a conversation you don't want to be in right there.
That was
wrong. I don't know why.
That was insensitive. That was cold.
One mom was poverty stricken.
You know, I'm going to tell you one thing. Hey, boys. I'm going to tell you one thing. One Christmas, I do remember that year we got that ball for Christmas. You know, the kids in the neighborhood, they came around there with cap pistols and everything, and their little dump trucks and bicycles and stuff. And the only thing we had was that ball, right? And we somehow or another convinced everybody in the neighborhood that ball was the thing to have. So next thing you know, all them cap pistols were laying around a pile, the bicycles were parked, and trucks were parked, and everybody out in the backyard playing dodgeball. I said, now you know these gateways are some.
Hey, so Joe sold that. Joe's been a salesman all his life.
I sold him a trick ball. Everybody out there, Joe was playing dodgeball. He played dodgeball all day.
What a trick ball.
That might be the one that invented that game. I don't know.
That trick ball to me, that was a cruel toy. Whoever thought about that? That trick ball.
Yeah.
You bounce that darn thing.
And that's what was the sad part about it, man. We got one ball, and it was a trick ball. Couldn't even bounce that sucker.
Talking about symbolism. Oh, my goodness.
You know, Daddy probably got up there late. You know, Daddy probably got there late. That's the only ball they had left.
That's what it was.
That was it, dog.
Pop didn't know anything about no trick ball. Pop didn't want Pop wanted a regular ball. That was the only thing left.
That was the only ball thing.
Think about it, guys. They didn't have one at a store of toys. They didn't have anywhere to store the toys, so they always went uptown about five o'clock when the stores were going to close at 6. Because they knew everything they got, they would have to get it in the car. So it's got a ball. It's a freaking
car. That's for sure.
They didn't have to hide
I'm trying to think of the most I ever got for Christmas. I'm trying to think. What did I get?
Somebody got a bike. I don't know that for getting all 14 of our bikes at work. Somebody got a bike.
I think the best Christmas I ever got, I had a little toy truck I got for Christmas one year, and it had a big old light on it.
Was that your truck?
Yeah. Huh?
I thought that was William them truck. The boy next door.
No, man, I got a truck, man. I had a light on it. My only problem was the darn thing, the battery ran out and couldn't get no more batteries.
They sold them somewhere, didn't
they? Yeah, that was you know, that was it, buddy. When the batteries went out, that was it. It was over.
Hey,
you
boy,
got
next
batteries.
Wednesday's Christmas. Hey, Robert. Next
yep.
Wednesday's Christmas, man. Y'all gonna be on the radio, or y'all just gonna kind of hang out with Mama?
I think we probably get hang out next week, man.
We'll be on the radio. We'll make sure we practice the Temptations Silent Night and make sure we have it down pat so we can sing it on the radio.
Oh,
all right, that'll work.
Yeah, we'll just lay it on. Yeah, well, look, guys, Merry Christmas. Robert, you coming home, man?
Yeah, man, I'm
coming.
I think I'm going to make it down this – I think I'm going to come down this weekend, man, and hang out and hang it out as long as I can. So I'll probably see y'all this weekend. That's my plan.
In my mind.
Oh, that's right. I got to find your
– I look forward to seeing you.
I want you to be free to all of my family and friends. I want you to listen to me. Hear what I say.
Hey, Joe. Joe.
Yo. Yo.
Sing the wrong song.
Yeah. We got to get that. Have we ever sung that song right?
No.
No.
Why we can't get that song?
It's hard to sing,
right.
Man. It's really difficult. It's really difficult to sing. It's weird.
The hard part is
well,
the lead part,
again,
and I Huh? What do you think?
Robert, we'll try this weekend, man.
All right, let's work on your notes, guys. Work on your notes because we got to get this song. We can sing everything else, but for some reason, we have not been able to get Silent Night.
You know why?
Why is it?
So you don't try it once a year.
Money.
Huh?
Money.
You know what?
Cost
you know
money.
Another reason I thought about? You know another reason I thought about, guys?
What?
We can't sing. Maybe
that's not it. Okay, I want y'all in my mind.
For the night before Christmas and all through the house, not a creature was stirring.
Oh,
we don't
have
anybody that can do that.
I want you to be free. Want you to be free.
There you go. Somebody got it over there.
That's pretty close. Joe.
All of my family and friends.
That's pretty close.
To
I want you to listen to me.
You sound all right over there.
I hear what I say.
I hear what I say.
Mm-hmm.
All night, holy night,
116 votes needed to impeach. We are at 120.
They have 13 minutes left to vote.
I'm in pain.
I am dreaming. Sir.
Oh, I
what do you got?
30. Play up with Mike.
130.
430.
It is so far.
That's 135.
We have one nay vote from a Democrat so far.
They said the one half from Democrat was gonna vote against it. And he's
gonna
switch his party
to the Republican. Yeah. I think most of the staff already quit.
Yeah, all the staff quit when they see that.
Yeah, well, see the name already.
Leon Robert Curtis. He's talking about these white supremacists about them rising up. Got them niggas to whoop their butt one time. Hey, boy, let me say good night to you.
All right, brother.
Good night, money. Good night, brother. I'm sure this vote is going to go toward impeaching Donald Trump. So, that's all I'll say, a prayer for America. This is a crazy, mixed up place at the moment.
Video.
Not because we're agreeing to impeach Donald Trump, but because we have allowed him to, this country has, over half of this country has allowed him to destroy it, basically. And
Phoenix,
somehow.
I'm on rope too. Yeah.
Sir,
hi, Leon, bro.
Hi, brothers. God bless you, brothers. Raleigh, have a safe trip down the road, man. I'll be playing for a party in Raleigh this Saturday, I think.
All right.
But anyway, we'll stay in touch, brother.
Hi, bro. Likewise.
Be careful.